Back into another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. I am your co-host Corey Cannon alongside Dalton Miller. Again, some cool stuff happening on Daft on Draft, post-draft, honestly. We're kicking it up a notch. When Dalton has his coffee, I have my coffee because it's midnight and I'm trying to get through this as well. So we both have our coffees here doing our overseas recording. But yeah, lots of good stuff going on. I streamed today for the second time this week, so that's interesting and a change of pace for me. I'm still trying to figure that out and how to fill, make sure there's no dead air space on live streams and things like that. But I've been live streaming College Football 25 and answering NFL draft questions, so that's been pretty fun. It's been pretty fun. Dropped a couple of pieces on the Substack as well. One, a featured piece on Fernando Mendoza, who... Dalton, I don't know if you saw this. Nate Tice dropped an early 2026 big board with Fernando Mendoza as his quarterback one as well.
So yeah, well, who did we have as quarterback one coming into the year this year?
Carson Beck.
No, we didn't.
We had freaking Connor Wigman.
Yeah. Just letting you guys know how much things can change in the course of 12 months. This is going into next year. This is looking at upside. This is looking at physical traits. This is looking at potential. This is also looking at charting going into next year. And everything can fall apart if things don't go well. Let's all just acknowledge that we can talk about a guy and love a guy now, and we can change our minds when new information is presented. This isn't just a Fernando Mendoza tweet. This is an overall...
Yeah,
things change very quickly in the football and in the world landscape.
I will say the difference between Wigman last year and Mendoza this year is we knew going into last season, like, this is not a deep quarterback class. And so we were like kind of scratching, and we went after a guy who had three starts. We're like, man, this guy's a five star. He's got the tools. Mendoza, I charted nine games, and this dude's freaking awesome. Things could still change, obviously. And then secondly, I've already launched my weighted on target percentage database for summer scouting as well. 9 full profiles already up in that joint, looking to probably get 8 more out. But that's enough clerical stuff here. Dalton, we did the AFC North yesterday. AFC North, we graded them all out pretty well. They all did well for themselves. Moving on to the AFC South today. Dalton, how are you, first of all?
I'm fantastic.
What's life like with power?
Life is perfect with power. It's fantastic. I actually had a minor meltdown the other day because I lost an entire YouTube video that I had cut up and was ready to go on Premiere Pro. And so I deleted Premiere Pro and then got it back in. But we need to talk about the NFL draft here, not about me. And let's get to it. Let's get to the grades, the composite grades for each of these AFC South teams. When we look at it, the media world was not very happy with these drafts. The Colts finished 22nd. The Texans finished 21st. The Titans 15th. And the Jaguars finished 10th. Okay, so we had one of the AFC South teams crack the top 10. We will see how we feel about them. But just going over these drafts once again, did not hate them. And I think when we look at these composite drafts, a lot of these are like the Colts didn't get a grade below, like a grade below C minus. Mm-hmm. The Texans only got one D. And so like these teams didn't draft poorly in the eyes of the media. It's just everybody else drafted better according to the media. And so not bad drafts. And when you look at it, I don't think that they were bad drafts. Who do you want to start with? Do you just want to start in alphabetical order and go from Houston on to Tennessee? Or do you want to start with Tennessee because they had the first pick?
Let's do the draft order. Let's go draft order. So let's start with the
Okay.
Titans. Yeah, let's do that.
All right, let's do Tennessee first. In Tennessee, Cam Ward chalk. We knew this
for
a month and a half going into it. Yeah, it is what it is. They needed a quarterback. I think it's going to be a frustrating time to start, but we will see if Brian Callahan can get out of this year with his job, first of all, because we all know Tennessee loves to fire head coaches and general managers separately. They have a new GM. So guess who's going next? The second pick, Oluwafemi Oladejo from UCLA, somebody who was really off of the radar until the Senior Bowl and flashed some outrageous upside as a DPR type, but with DPR and full three down potential with his length, I think that he needs to get used to the position. Obviously, he was a linebacker before playing edge full time this year, and so for me, this was an upside pick. This, as you said in the pre-show, probably a little bit early. I would have preferred this in round three, but I am never going to be too upset with taking high upside at that position, specifically at the edge spot.
Yeah, that's relatively fair. I'm trying to go to round. Let me see here. Nick Scorton was the pick right before him. I wonder if they would have gone Nick Scorton there. We saw a little run on edges right before that too. Ezra Waku went 44. JT Tuimoloau went 45. Scorton 51. And then Mike Green right after, like 59 there. So I guess when I look at it through the lens of like what edges were still on the board, that kind of eases the, like, because I do think Oladejo is a little raw. Like that's pretty early for a player that needs a lot of developing. But when you look, if you need an edge, like the next edge to go was 72 or 66 and Ashton Gelati, and then 72 Landon Jackson.
And we say this, but like Adafi Owe was a first round pick. Like obviously he was a freak athlete, but like he was not good at football. You know what I mean? So like we see these freaky long athletic dudes with a ton of raw upside at the position go early. And I think we live in a time now where these private positional coaches are able to extract the most out of these guys early on while they develop, if they develop. But I think we're doing a very good job of finding these niche roles for these guys to maximize their potential in what they have in the immediacy while trying to grow them. And a lot of them never, ever develop. But I think we're doing a much better job now of extracting that athleticism and really shining the light on those while kind of hiding their flaws for the most part.
Agreed. Moving on, Kevin Winston, 82. I know you're not the biggest Kevin Winston fan in the world, but do you think 82 is appropriate value for Kevin Winston there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's about where I would have loved to take him. I think that value is absolutely perfect. Fantastic athlete. I think that he actually has some slot versatility to him. And honestly, he's built to me. To me, he's built like a corner. He is super long. I think that he is best as a reactive athlete and not as a above the shoulders processor. And so if you can get him in that sort of role, I really like it. As a single high guy who is going to protect 30 yards down the field, I like him there as well. But I don't think he's a playmaker. I think he's a safety net on the back end. But he is an unbelievable tackler, a great athlete, and I think that you can work with that if you can find a role for him to where he doesn't have to think and react too much to what he's seeing in front of him.
Yeah, that's fair. That's valid. I have a buddy who's a scout who played DB in college, and like that's what he really like specializes in. And he was like, "Yeah, man, I loved Kevin Winston over the summer, and if he wouldn't have got hurt, I think he would have been a first round pick." Giving him an 82 there sounds good to me. Moving on to round four, this is where I was like, Jamari DK.
Just real quick on Winston, he just needs more time. Mm-hmm. He just hasn't played a lot of football. Yeah. And so he very well could have developed that above the shoulders this year if he would have played more. But I didn't think his first two games were very good. Like before he got hurt, I hadn't seen that development that I was hoping to see from him. And that's why he ended up being a lower grade for me.
Yeah. for sure. Yeah, Chimera DK, 103. I get he's fast. Like, I mean, this is better than drafting Tyquan Thornton in round two because he ran really fast at the combine, like the Patriots did a couple of years ago. But, and I, to be honest, like, I probably feel better if they just swap Elikayo Manor and Chimera DK in the order that they drafted these wide receivers. I'm like, oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So it's probably a wash to begin with. But that feels a little steep to get him at 103. Gunnar Helm at 120, though. Again, I will maintain, because I've been on the record of saying this, Gunnar Helm has one of the highest floors of any player in this draft class. Like, I don't know how a team drafts Gunnar Helm and he doesn't produce in some regard. How he doesn't become a pro in some regard. So getting him at pick 120, and I think that's a great, great target for Cam Ward to have right there.
I think Gunnar Helm is going to be one of the most reliable pros in this class. You said it. He is. It's funny because my good buddy Max Toscano disagrees with me vehemently about Gunnar Helm and his ability as a blocker. I think he's a fantastic inline guy, even though he is not the biggest dude in the world. I think he battles his butt off. I think that he is technically sound as a blocker. I think that he can pass protect. And even though he tested poorly at the NFL combine, like very poorly, and even before the injury, before the 40, he did not test well explosively. I just watched the guy play football, and he looks more athletic on tape. He looks smoother on tape. And I think he's going to be one of those guys. And I think I've said this from the start, like 500 to 800 yards for the next 7-8 years, mm-hmm. plus being a plus blocker. And for a fourth round value, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, we have been a Gunnar Helm podcast for quite some time. Round four. And then Elikayo Manor, this is where he finally came off the board. I wasn't the biggest Elikayo Manor fan, but I could not believe he fell into day three. Just because he's a big dude who blocks. He has athletic, like he's a plus athlete for the wide receiver position. And maybe it's just a symptom of not doing anything pre-draft. Like he accepted a Senior Bowl invite and then didn't play. And I don't know if he was hurt or not, but then he didn't do a whole lot at the combine. So like maybe that's what it was a little bit, but I thought for sure this guy was going to go top 100, even if I wasn't the highest on Elikayo Manor. So seeing him fall to 136, I think it's a great situation for both him and Cam Ward, because that Titans wide receiver room was god awful entering draft weekend, and then they drafted two wide receivers and signed Tyler Lockett on the first day of the draft. So like that makes it look a little bit better on paper. So I think this is a really good fit for him, and he could develop into their starting Z like next year.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's an X, don't you?
Yeah, well, yeah. So I struggle because like
body type X,
but he wants to play like a Z.
Yeah, body type X. Yeah. And honestly, like the XZ, it's all somewhat interchangeable these days. You know, a lot of the best guys in the NFL are playing from the slot now. So it just kind of is what it is. But I think with his frame, his ability as a blocker, the inability for that team to get him the football, I really like the player. He's the only guy really that we've seen put Travis Hunter on the back foot, like legitimately put him on the back foot. And again, like playing at elevation, playing both sides of the ball, it was 2023. He was probably absolutely tanked out there playing corner because it was, I think, one of his bigger receiving games as well that year. Talking about Travis Hunter. But Ayumanor is a great athlete for that size. And get him somebody who can get him the ball. And I think that you're looking at a legitimate playmaker in round four for the Tennessee Titans. And then you talked about a pre-show. You think that Jackson Slater could potentially start for this football team?
Mm-hmm. I do. Again, they've built up their offensive line pretty well. But I think their kind of one weakness might be that center to... Yeah, like he could play center, I think, but like potentially right guard to not this year, but next year. Like Kevin Zeitler's is on a one-year deal and he's not getting any younger. And right now their starting center is Corey Levin, as Lloyd Cushenberry is not healthy, but even like Lloyd Cushenberry isn't an incumbent that's hard to unseat, you know? So like, I think Jackson Slater could find quite a bit of starting time as a rookie.
Especially, it's a weird fit with Cushenberry and Callahan, right? It seems more of a he would like a little bit more more arse. But anyways,
yeah.
Did you have anything to say about Harris and Mullings? We're already 15 minutes in and we're only on team one.
No,
here.
I don't have an opinion on either. Mullings, I think, makes the roster only because the other two backs in that room are Tajay Spears and Tony Pollard, who are pretty east-west twitchy pass catchers. So like they don't have a big boy in that running back room. So like he probably makes the roster because of that. But like I don't love him as a player.
No, but, neither do I.
Yeah.
Moving on to the next pick, which was the Jacksonville Jaguars, because they picked second overall because they traded with the Cleveland Browns. Do you want to get into the value of the trade or anything? Because yeah, I didn't think it was terrible.
We've never seen a trade like that before, I think is the place to start. Like most teams coming up that few slots outside of the first overall pick are giving up like 3 second round picks to come up that far. And they gave up a top 40 pick this year and a future one. So like it is a lot to give up, but it's, you know, you're a first year GM. And if you want to go get your guy, and we're talking about a rare one of one player that we might not see a player like him in quite some time. Cause it's been a while since we've seen a player like him to begin with. Like stand on your backbone, like have a backbone. If this is really how you value this guy, then go get him. And I think they did that. Now, what could get dicey is like we've talked about the Trevor Lawrence thing. It's now or never for Trevor Lawrence. If it doesn't pan out this year, you don't have a first round pick next year. So like you're going to ride out Trevor Lawrence for at least two more years, which I still think is fine, because I do think he's going to be a dude and he's going to come around this year regardless. But he has had some injuries too. So like say he does get hurt again, like that's a top five pick probably. If Trevor Lawrence gets hurt, that's probably a top five pick. So that's where it kind of gets a little bit dicey, but we're talking about Travis freaking Hunter. And if you have that much conviction, and James Gladstone has it's almost on repeat. Like he's got it on a button on a soundboard about intangibly rich players. It's a Les Snead thing. It's a Sean McVay thing. It's a Rams culture thing. Intangibly rich players. Like they got the most intangibly rich player in the class and also the best player in the class. So like, stand on what you believe in. And I think they did that and they went out and they got the best player in the draft.
Yeah. I think it's funny. They drafted two corners and maybe neither of them are actually corners, according to ESPN, because Travis Hunter, wide receiver, I assume he'll play outside corner for them as well. And then Caleb Ransall in round three, somebody who I loved, I adored, I loved his tape. His ball skills are pretty atrocious. But other than that, like he's a great athlete. He is an even better athlete at the combine than I thought that he was on tape. But for me, it was that intangibly rich bit that you were just talking about and his willingness to play on the end of the line of scrimmage for that Tulane defense and blow up pulling guards. Like he does the dirty work for them. He has the ability to drop back into cover four from the slot and play in quarters. Like he can do it. And so I think he is a versatile secondary player and they needed versatility and talent on the secondary. I think that they could play him outside as well and then move him to the inside, to the slot, or even on the back end when Travis is playing defense. So you can move them around mm-hmm. a little bit and mix and match them. And then for me, the very next selection was Wyatt Millam, and Millam might have had the best tape of the year against Abdul Carter. Mm-hmm. Like
week one, yeah.
Yeah, and it was early, and Abdul Carter just kept getting better and better and better and better. But Millam is a good football player who wasn't a great tester and isn't a great athlete on tape, but I think at guard is going to be a solid player for them, and they have needed to address the offensive line because it has not been good no matter who they have really thrown in there, and they've dealt with a lot of injuries on the offensive line as well. How do you feel about those two picks there?
In terms of getting Milam in round three, I think that's fine.
Yeah.
I wasn't a huge Milam fan on tape or the testing, obviously, there at the end too. But like we knew, like we were mocking Will Campbell to this team for the longest time up until, you know, we started doing Mason Graham and then Gentee, and then they traded up for Travis Hunter. But like, so we were mocking a guard to them at five. Will Campbell's going to play left tackle, but like most people were saying he was going to, like, mocking him there as a guard. to get Milam in round three, who might even start as a rookie, I think is great. You were a Ransaw fan. Did you think that he would go top 100, though?
Yes.
You did?
After the combine, yes. When you run a 4.33.
Yeah.
Yes.
That rules. That rules. Bashel Tootin as well. That,
he's one of my favorite players in this draft.
Yeah. If he can get the fumbling things, he might lead that team in rushing if he can get the fumbling thing under control.
Yeah, well,
because they're going to cast Travis Etienne to the freaking wayside.
Yeah, well, yes, but not just the fumbling thing, but the knees, because the knees in the last 2 years, and this is a guy who, outside of Ashton Janti, I don't think anybody has broken more tackles over the past 2 years than Bashel Tootin. He has that lateral juice and contact balance that is really, really special, and for me, he did that with busted up knees. Mm-hmm. So if he can be healthy and keep those knees going, I mean, he was making dudes look silly with a big ass knee brace on.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited for a fully healthy Bashel Tootin who can hopefully hold on to the football a little bit better, which again, like I have been on record saying, I don't care about because I think it's an incredibly fixable
volatile.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jack,
they doubled up. Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt there, but they doubled up on running back too. I know you weren't a huge LaQuint Allen fan, but like that guy's a
pass catcher, but
and like he'll catch passes out of the backfield. So like,
yeah,
I like fine. That.
Round seven, that's a perfectly acceptable pick. Jack Kaiser, you take a member of the secondary and linebacker in for me, for Notre Dame specifically, because it's one of the very few colleges that actually have their linebackers playing coverage. I love it. I love it. I mean, Jack Kaiser's going to come in and be one of the most well-coached guys on the roster from day one. And so, yeah, love that. Love that selection.
Yeah. I don't have a huge opinion on Kaiser, McLeod, Lane, to be honest with you. Those are guys that I didn't get around to. So I don't have a huge opinion on those. But like Jonah Monheim in round seven, they might have got a future starter in round seven right there.
Yeah. Yes, they might. Yeah. Yeah, because I thought he was good this year.
Yeah, I did too.
I thought he was good this year.
And then he got a good Senior Bowl. And I mean, he played left tackle his whole career with 29-inch arms up until his last year. Like, that's bizarre. Yeah. And I hated his tackle tape. But, you know, I thought he's athletic. He's going to scheme fit. He's a scheme fit with Liam Cohen.
Yeah. And I think McLeod, I think the fit's pretty good because he played a lot on the outside for Auburn. And I think that he has that Sam and inside versatility. So, you know, later on day three, he's 240, like 5 pounds as well. So he's a little bit of a bruiser, can come downhill, defend the run. I don't mind that fit. So I don't have anything on Lane either.
I didn't watch Navy tape. I'm just going.
No.
We can be honest right there.
We can move on, and we should move on.
Indianapolis Colts.
The Colts. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, they graded this. The consensus expert grades were very low on the Colts, but I love this draft.
Yeah, they hit their biggest need with a freak athlete, top 10 player, top 6 player for me. At number 14, and I get that he's a tight end, but he was the second tight end off of the board if you count Colson Loveland as a tight end. Mm-hmm. That was a home run pick. And it's a home run pick for Chris Ballard because Tyler Warren is everything that Chris Ballard could dream of. Mm-hmm. I guarantee when he saw him on the board, Chris Ballard's in great shape. I bet that dude ran like Usain Bolt to that telephone. Immediately. It's that easy.
Yep. We've been saying Tyler Warren's a Colt since like November. We've been like, yeah, that's a Colt. That's a Colts guy. Boom. There it is. JT Tuimoloau, I thought was a little early. Again, 45th overall for a guy who I think is pretty solid, but has no defining traits.
It's a pretty Colts pick, though. It's a pretty Colts pick, though.
Yeah, especially looking at Luana Rumo got out of Sam Hubbard. It's very much that base endy, no traits, but like rock solid-ish kind of all the way around kind of player.
Yeah, it's just a weird pairing with Quiddy Pay. It's a little bit redundant.
Yeah, with Samson Ebukam as well. Like, they've got a kind of a weird room.
Yeah, it's not a bad room, though. It's just a little weird.
Justin Wally was a late riser.
Again, like, another good player.
But he's a good freaking player. I had a scout tell me, like, we might take him. We would consider taking him second round. Obviously, they didn't because he was on the board here at the 80th overall pick. Mm-hmm. But, like, Justin Wally's a good player with inside-out versatility.
And then the next three picks, actually, the more I look at this draft, the more I actually like it quite a bit. Jalen Travis, fantastic athlete. DJ Giddens, we've talked about it. We think that he can be a first or second down guy. He's going to take away, like you said, from the pitch count of
Jonathan
JT
Taylor.
Because he needs it.
Yeah.
I think Riley Leonard is the perfect backup for Shane. The perfect backup for Shane Steichen. The perfect backup for Shane Steichen. Doesn't get any better. He's going to take care of the football. He is a good athlete who will be able to threaten you on the ground. Perfect backup. Tim Smith has been around forever at Alabama. I think he's just a solid player overall. And then Hunter Waller is somebody who we loved at the Senior Bowl, who just kept getting mossed by these tight ends in tight window throws. Great but he was decision. Right on them the entire time. He's got great size. He was one of the white safeties along with Dan Jackson at the Senior Bowl, who I really enjoyed their tape of the Senior Bowl. And then when I got around to them after the Senior Bowl watching their actual tape, I independently thought that they were pretty decent players. And day three picks are perfect for value for those two guys. So I really like the Colts draft.
I do too. Jalen Travis could develop into a starter. Like, he's got that upside. And his Iowa State tape, and he was a Princeton transfer. So, like, obviously the Princeton tape isn't splendid, but then he transfers to a P4 school from Princeton and then goes to the Senior Bowl and has an awesome Senior Bowl. So it's like, and again, the best athlete in the offensive tackle class, like, tested like the best athlete in the offensive tackle class.
And he was at Princeton. So he's not a dummy.
Correct.
He's not a dummy.
Correct.
I think we can move on to the Texans now, who didn't pick forever.
This is the weirdest draft to me, maybe of any team. Like, this is just a weird freaking draft. Honestly, I like the Iowa State receiver they drafted at 79 more than the one they got at 34. Yeah. The Ursary pick makes a ton of sense.
Well, and if we're talking about value, we way love the Noel pick more than the Higgins.
I straight up like Noel more than Higgins.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know, but that's what I'm saying, like, from a value perspective. But I do think pairing those guys, I mean, we saw it at Iowa State, even though I don't think that they were necessarily used in the roles that I would probably use them in. Like, Higgins got a lot more downfield targets than Noel did, and Noel's top speed and ability in that respect is good. But, like, I think he's a Brandon Cooks type. We've kind of talked about this. I love him. And then you're going to give CJ Stroud somebody who can go and attack the football as well with Jaden Higgins. I think it's a really good pairing between the two of them. And then you give him also Woody Marks, who, I mean, could legitimately catch 100 passes out of the backfield a year, because that's what he did at USC. And that's what he did at Mississippi State forever. The dude just catches passes. He is, I believe, 17th in college football history in receptions.
It's a fun fact.
As a running back.
A little Dalton Miller fun fact right there. That was, you pulled that one.
As a running back.
Yeah.
And they went USC. I was a big fan of Jalen Smith as well. He tested, I think, better than I think that he was an athlete on tape. But another guy who I think kind of fits that defense in the fact that he's kind of a dog. Mm-hmm. And then I know that you didn't love Jalen Reed. I didn't love Jalen Reed, but again, dog, somebody who's going to come down the hill and hit you. And I think playing in that role in that defense is something that I could see him do on a rotational basis.
I couldn't believe Graham Mertz got drafted though.
Me neither.
I could not. And he got drafted ahead of Quinn Ewers, dude.
I don't hate that as much, but the big thick quarterbacks at Houston as backups is kind of the thing, right?
Yeah, he's got a shorter neck than the
Driscoll.
Other guy, but
he's not as athletic as Driscoll, but Luke Lackey for me is my favorite pick in this class.
Like, the second
I love Luke Lackey. A really unfortunate injury that he sustained, and it kind of zapped him a little bit, but I still think he's a really fluid athlete. I think that he's a good blocker. And I think that he is going to be one of those guys where we look at in a couple of years and we're like, he had a really good NFL career. a really good NFL career. So,
yeah, I'm a little interested that they didn't go running back a little earlier, like try to make an investment in running back earlier, just because Joe Mixon is on the last year of his deal and they don't really have anybody else in that room.
Just take a couple of rookies next year.
Yeah, like the Browns.
That's how I feel about running back. Like, I don't think there's any real like need to plan ahead at the position because you're going to get the most value out of them as they're their youngest.
Yeah, that's valid. That's valid. Overall, this was probably my least favorite draft in the division.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is just a weird draft. Like, this is just a weird list of names to put on a list together. It just feels, I don't know. Like,
especially because
aesthetically,
like,
it creeps me out.
It really makes me worry about Tank Dell a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and we should be worried about Tank Dell.
Season-ending injury, getting shot. Season-ending injury, like that's
yeah. Nika, because look at this, they went out and got Christian Kirk.
Yep.
So you're looking at a wide receiver room of Nico Collins, John Metchie, Christian Kirk, Jalen Knoll, Jaden Higgins, and Tank Dell. That's a lot of freaking names. That's a lot of names.
And if you think about like how Jalen Knoll plays.
And hold on, Xavier Hutchinson, Justin Watson, and Paxton Berrios are on the roster right now, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Agreed. Yeah, it's unfortunate for sure because he is so electric when he's on the field.
Yeah.
Such a natural athlete. So much fun. But all right. Well, that's the AFC South.
Well, we got to grade him quick.
Oh yeah, we do. You're right.
We do have to grade him. We have to grade him. Houston, I'm gonna give a D plus too.
I was gonna say C minus.
It's just kind of weird. I'm gonna give him a D plus.
Yeah.
The Colts are a
A minus. What,
like I mean the Warren thing was so easy. You know what I mean? Like for me, it's a B minus. It's a pretty good draft overall. Maybe B. I'm gonna give it a B.
I'll go B plus. I love it. They knocked day three out of the frickin'.
I think they did really well in day three as well. I'm gonna give it a B. Jacksonville.
Jaguars.
I really like days one and days two all the way up until Jack Kaiser in round four. So for me, because they got so much value up top and guys who I think can make a difference. I'm going to go with a B here as well.
I was going to go. That's exactly what I was going to go with too.
Mm-hmm. B there. And then Tennessee, kind of a tough one, but I do like the value of Gunnar Helm, Elik Ayumanor, and Jackson Slater.
Yeah. This feels like a B to me as well.
Yeah. And maybe, because I don't, I like the Winston value as well. I think it was a little bit early on Oladejo, but I'm good with betting on the athletic upside for him. So I think this is a B minus for me. Because again, like the Cam Ward thing was, it is what it is. I mean,
yeah, you can't grade that pick. Yeah.
No, you can't grade that pick. So yeah, love it. Let's get the people out of here.
All right. Well, that's it. AFC South done. We're off. We got two sides left of the AFC and then the rest of the NFC to go, but we're going to work on through this. But until next time, this has been the Daft on Draft Podcast. Goodbye.